White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 384.
This is the AU Wishbone, continued off-season coverage.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are back in mid to late February to catch up on a few odds and ends of what's going on in the Auburn world at this time of the year. It's not a super busy time, but there are certainly things going on. And, I like in our outline, you asked me the question because, I've stated before that when everything else is going wrong this time last year, Auburn basketball was my happy place. And so what's the first question you asked me here?
What's your happy place right now, Ben?
well, see, it's not basketball and it's not football. And racing, IndyCar starts back in mid-March, Formula One in late March. So right now, my happy place is the pit of misery. I'm living in the pit of misery, John. How about you? How are things?
Basketball season isn't everything I dreamed of, but I'm still enjoying it. Should appreciate good basketball. We can get it because we were deprived of it for so long. I'm trying to appreciate it every day when they play.
Well, I was trying to explain this to my wife. I think she understands. I said it's not like just an average sports team where when they lose, you're disappointed at least as much for yourself, right, that you didn't get to enjoy it as you are for them. This basketball team has been, I don't know really what word to use. I'll just say lovable, right? I mean, they're just a lovable bunch. They're honor students, and good guys. And I genuinely feel bad for them when they lose. I want them to win, not just because I want Auburn to win at something. I want this crowd to win because I like them and I want them. I feel like they deserve to be winners at stuff. And so it really just gets me down when they lose. And I don't mean down like I would just normally be down if we lost a football game to Georgia or something. I mean, like, I just feel bad for them. And so it got to where I just couldn't see them suffering another disappointing loss. And so my wife said, well, why don't you just record them? And then when the game is over, if they won, you can go back and watch it. And if not, you can spare yourself 2 hours of the pit of misery, and I said, that's a good idea. So the last couple of games, I just said, I got better things to do in my life than be miserable, than sit down and be miserable for 2 or 2.5 hours. And so I went back and watched the Vanderbilt game and enjoyed it. But I just don't feel the need right now to watch them be sad and me be sad watching them be sad. Does that make the slightest bit of sense? I don't know.
Of course it does. You want them to do well, and when they struggle, it's frustrating.
Yes.
And
disappointing.
It's disappointing because there's so much talent there. But also, in the big picture, mm-hmm. Sometimes I like to bring us back to in this podcast.
Yes.
When I say the word disappointing, this is still going to end up being one of the better basketball seasons in Auburn history.
Yeah, that's true.
So disappointing is really just a matter of perspective of what your expectations in the preseason were. We have 6 games left, I think, SEC games. I think there's a real chance we could go 4-2 in those games. And then we'd be like a couple games over 500 in conference and 21-12 or something like that. And that would be pretty darn good season.
I can't imagine how we've only got that many games left. It feels to me like we're not even halfway yet. I mean,
it's mid-February, Van. March is conference tournament time.
But I mean, we haven't played Mississippi State twice. We haven't played Texas A&M twice. We haven't played Alabama twice. Don't we play all the teams in the West twice? Okay, we have
those three, and we have Kentucky and Tennessee.
I'm going to say we haven't played Tennessee at all yet. We're supposed to play them. I think we play Kentucky again.
That's five.
And then we played Ole Miss twice. I don't know if we're supposed to play Georgia again or not, or Florida. LSU we've only played once, right? Right?
I'm double checking. Keep going.
Okay. It just feels to me like we've played about a third of the games in the conference that we're supposed to play. It doesn't seem anything like last year. Uh-oh, what's going on? Some kind of critical error here. Oh, well.
Hello?
Yeah, do you hear me?
You still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. You hear me?
Yeah.
Did I drop out?
No, you're saying this error thing, and I got a little worried. So.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. It's ADM capturing window Radeon settings.exe. Memory could not be... Whatever, I don't know. I'll say to this computer at this point, because the computer has got us 30 minutes late tonight giving all these errors, and I just want to tell this computer...
You have failed me for the last time.
That's what I want to say to my computer. Well, anyway, I guess if we want to wrap up our basketball talk now and just say that they got this could be the opposite of last season. Last season they were great in the regular season up until almost the end, right? And then they really
peaked like in January of last year.
They did. They were awesome in January, and then they were started to drop off a little bit. Even people forget they were dropping off even before McLemore got hurt, and then once he was out, that was it. And I really am starting to feel like this season they really are missing our player that transferred to St. John's,
Mustafa Heron.
Yeah, I feel like when he was on the court, he was one of those players that's sort of sneaky good. Like, he was really good, but he wasn't flashy like Bryce Brown or in a position where you had your eyes on him all the time like Jared Harper, or a big man that you can't miss. You know, there's positions on the basketball court that catch your eye, you know, and then there's positions that don't. And he was just kind of like a utility infielder that did everything well. He wasn't the constant three-point threat that Bryce Brown was. He wasn't handling the ball constantly like Jared. And he wasn't the big man. He was just kind of like filling in all the secondary roles. And without him, I mean, you'd think that Chuma would be stepping up. You'd think that Malik Dunbar would be doing – we've got some really talented players on this team. And I feel like they're getting about 4 points a game and a couple of rebounds and having one really good, you know, alley-oop or something like that per game. But otherwise, they're kind of invisible. I just don't understand that.
But two things. One, I think in the early to mid-season, this team really did kind of struggle with the too many players thing a little bit, I think. It honestly, like a shorter bench – might have been better. They were also really, I think the whole Wiley thing really messed them up. You know, he wasn't there at the beginning, and they started playing a certain style of kind of up and down basketball. And then he came back, and he played a little bit, and they were still okay. Then he really started to emerge as a really good player again, and they kind of completely changed their style, did a bunch more kind of slow down, feed the post kind of old school basketball. And then he got hurt, and then they had to like reinvent, you know, which way they were going to play again. And then he came back, and he hasn't been anything close to the same. He's not the same player at all.
No.
As he was, you know, a couple years ago, or as he was early in the season. He's, he's never been a great defensive player. He doesn't move well, and he's not a great rebounder for a guy his size. And offensively, he's having a hard time getting a shot off against Big Ben right now. So And then
and he foul shooting so about 50%. So you just yeah.
That's right. So then, you know, that, and then we had our guy that transferred from VCU, who I was really excited about, and he has not replaced Heron nearly as well as I thought he would.
Who is that?
He's
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have asked you. I just was really genuinely curious.
Samir Dowdy.
Oh, Dowdy, yeah.
Samir Dowdy.
Yeah, he's been okay, but...
He's kind of a Swiss Army knife kind of player, but he turns the ball over. He's not a good finisher. He's not a great defender. And yeah. I mean, I would tell you in the last several games, two things have happened. One is that Schumann has kind of emerged, mm-hmm. and he's kind of starting to feel himself as to be the third kind of force on this team, and to be like the guy that could take over the game. Like if Bryce or mm-hmm. Jared are not having a good night, Chuma can take over the game. And I think he's starting to feel that right now. He's starting to kind of feel himself as a guy that can do that in a big SEC game. And then their best lineup right now is honestly Harper, Bryce Brown, Chuma, Dunbar, and Horace Spencer. Mm-hmm. Like that's the best lineup right now. Macklemore has never come back to be what he was before he got hurt last year. He's still really good. He plays really hard. He's a really smart guy, but he's not quite as explosive and everything as he was before he got hurt last year.
He's not blocking all those shots he did.
That's it. And I already talked about Wiley. The other guy that we missed, honestly, there was the other guy on last year's team who was the shorter kind of low post player. The short guy who, you know, was a transfer who kind of did all the back to the basket. He was like 6'3 or whatever, did all the back to the basket stuff, though, and it worked.
Yeah.
Kind of a broad guy. Mm. And he transferred away, too. And I think we missed him just because he was dependable. Like that, you know, that was a kind of a go to thing we could go to with the guys off the bench to get some dependable scoring. And I think we're missing that right now. But I think they're kind of finding a lineup that really works well together. And like I said, Chuma's coming on. And I think Malik Dunbar is kind of coming on. And I think this team can still, like you were saying, put it together and have a great run in the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament. They can still play really, really high-level basketball for a week or two and play with anybody in the country. Do you want me to talk? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the thing that I notice about them is that when things are not going well, which is all too often lately, last few weeks, the thing I notice is teams get out in their face and deny the three-point shot, make it extremely difficult for them to get off a good three-point shot. And at the same time, teams seem to be shooting way higher percentage three-point shots against our defense than they do normally. So when we play somebody and we can't even get off a shot and they're hitting miracle three-pointers every time down the field, down the court, then that's the recipe for losing every game. And that's, you know, against Georgia and against Vanderbilt, we're okay, but when we play anybody like Ole Miss that can actually come out and play defense on us, we can't get off a shot, and the other team just seems on fire three-pointer-wise. You know, how do you compete when that's the case? It's like in football, if you can run and stop the run. Well, everybody we play can three-point and stop the three-point.
We had two really terrible games there with scoring and defense. And I don't think it's a terminal problem. I think the Ole Miss game, the way they milked the clock and shot the three-pointers, I think they were a little bit, you know, that was about as lucky as they could get times there.
Six. I counted. Six times they got down to the last second.
They would have hit a few of them on average. To hit all of them was insane.
It was.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
So that kind of thing. I think the other thing is, honestly, like this team won the SEC last year. The SEC is a lot better conference this year.
It is.
And I'm not just saying that because Auburn is struggling. I'm saying that because I watch the other teams in college basketball, and I look around at, like, you know, Tennessee and Kentucky, and some of the other teams in this league. And I'm like, those teams are as good as anybody else in the country. So,
well, we'll see. Like you say, they've got a few more games to go, though fewer than I thought they did. But yeah, it could be, that's what I was saying a while ago, is it could be the reverse, where instead of having a strong regular season and then flaming out in the tournaments like we did last year, we could be flaming out now and maybe get our act together and have a decent SEC tournament, maybe a decent NCAA tournament if everything goes well. So right now they're still in the NCAA tournament, I think. So they just need to
100%.
Yeah, they just need to not look terrible the rest of the way and lose confidence and fall apart, you know.
That if you want to keep an eye on Auburn's tournament chances, like right, the NCAA has changed the ranking system, the computerized ranking system they use. It's not RPI anymore. They use something called NET. It's and Auburn is like 21st in the current rankings, I think, in NET. And the thing to keep an eye on is like it divides your wins and loss, you know, the teams you play up into four quadrants, and like teams in the top 30 in the country are in quadrant one, whatever. And against the teams that are currently in the top 30 in the country, Auburn is 0-8. The 31st and 32nd teams in the country, we've both beaten. So, and that's Washington and Florida. So our hope is that those teams can go win a couple of games down the stretch and get into the top 30 and kind of give us some top 30 wins. And that will really help our bona fides. But we're looking at getting in the NCAA tournament, but we're looking at, you know, very potentially like an 8-9 seed kind of thing.
Where we used to go in the 80s. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, in other news, we had signing day, and this was sort of like, you know, in the last couple of years now, signing day has been signing day A and signing day B, so it's not nearly what it was just about 3 years ago, which is kind of disappointing because it used to be fun, but it even got us to wear a shirt and tie there for for a video episode, so it's not quite what it used to be, but what did you make of signing day? Is it the sky's falling like some people say, or is it everything is okay like some people say, or somewhere in between?
I'm an optimist by nature. We know this if you listen to the podcast. And I try to take the big picture perspective about this kind of stuff. And, you know, Auburn had a really, really good signing class overall. I think the splitting signing day up leads to people kind of already counting their chickens with the guys that we, you know, got in the first part and wanting to get everybody in, a bunch of new guys in the second signing day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
And so you don't, you know, you kind of assume those guys. You know, there was good signing day itself. There was a real mixed kind of day. I mean, losing George Pickens, the receiver, was harsh, especially because he signed with Georgia. He was a five-star guy that had been committed to Auburn for 2 years. You know, like undecided leaning Auburn or anything, but literally had been committed to Auburn for 2 years. And Auburn had, you know, recruited him hard when he was, you know, a younger guy in high school and nobody else in the country knew who he was. So that was a tough one. But at the same time, you know, if you pick one position on the roster where we can lose a really talented player this year, I would say wide receiver is it. We have a bunch of talented guys at that position, and a bunch of talented young guys at that position. And then, you know, we did get a couple of guys, defensive linemen signing day and the days leading up to it, that were good. And we got the one, you know, the offensive lineman, that we beat out Florida State for, so that was pretty good. So in the big picture, you know, I was happy with the signing class. We're recruiting against Auburn and Georgia and LSU and Texas A&M, and all of those teams finished ahead of us. But at the same time, you know, Auburn signed fewer players than a lot of those teams. We only signed like 21 guys. Okay.
Yep.
When you look at the average ranking of the players, not the total points thing, whatever, but when you look at the average on a per player basis, we were like 8th in the country, I think, which is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
If we'll take that.
if we'd kept Pickens, it would have been like we'd been like eighth or sixth or something ridiculous. So yeah, I mean, that's how much that's how close it was to being, you know, that even the average to being that good. So yeah, so
on an average rating, like a numerical rating of the average, this was the best class that Malzahn has ever signed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just
so,
Go ahead. I'm just gonna say that the two drawbacks I think are the losing Pickens, but he may not even qualify, so just we'll see. And then the offensive lineman issue, which is a whole other issue.
Yeah. We signed three offensive linemen. One was a 4-star guy. And then, you know, we didn't sign any tackles.
Right.
So it's a huge thing going into next year where we're going to lose both tackles. We got to have tackles for the future. There's not anybody on the current roster. So we're probably looking at transfers. We got a commitment from the JUCO guy the other day. We're going to be going around telling every stud freshman offensive lineman in the country, if you want to play,
mm-hmm.
come to Auburn, you can play next year.
How have we gotten so far down in the hole on offensive linemen, especially tackles? I just don't get just bad recruiting the last few years.
It literally is like a quantity kind of thing where you need to take like, you know, four offensive linemen a year. And in the last 3 years, we've taken like seven.
Total.
So we've just, yes. So we literally just don't, I mean, there should be a larger percentage of your roster space devoted to offensive line scholarships that we currently have. And then I also think like we've recruited a number of guys who are on the offensive line who, you know, nobody's like, man, that guy. And I'm just going to throw some names at you here, okay? I mean, nobody's thinking these guys are going to take over, you know, after a year from now and be a dominant offensive line. We could be wrong. But Bailey Sharp, Prince Michael Sammons, Tayshaun Manning, maybe. Jaleel Irvin, maybe. Brodarius Ham, maybe. You know, Cameron Stutz, maybe. But there's a lot of we don't know in there.
Yeah.
Calvin Ashley transferred away.
Yeah.
Another
one of the I have a hard time being that upset about Pickens when you look at our other big 5-star players the last few years. I mean, I don't feel like there's been hardly any that have worked out. Certainly not the way they were billed, you know. They tend to crap out or transfer or both. I mean, Ashley was a 5-star, he transferred away. The big defensive lineman that was a big deal, he transferred away and never worked out. The
went to Maryland.
Wasn't the running back that went to Jacksonville State a 5-star by at least one service?
Rock Thomas.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like all of our 5-stars end up crapping out and transferring.
So. Yeah, but like Derek Brown's a 5-star. A couple other guys, the defensive line, were high recruiter guys. And in the current class, I mean, Papo.
Yeah.
Is a 5-star, is a linebacker that's going to come in and at a position of need, he's going to come in and play right away next year. He's a stud. Bo Nix is a stud.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got a lot of other 4-star guys that are really good players. Zion Puckett, I think, is going to be a really good player. I think, the defensive line class we signed is going to continue the kind of defensive line dominance that we've had the last few years. We know how important that position is, mm-hmm. and they crushed it again this year. We got Charles Moore on signing day. I mean, we went into Mississippi and got a lot of good players. We signed like two really good tackles and then a couple more guys who could really be that kind of speed rushing buck end that we wanted. So, yes, the Pickens thing hurt and the offensive tackle thing is a real structural problem that they have to go out and address. But I also feel like, you know, 6 months ago, late in the season, we were saying we have got to get two good quality running backs in this recruiting class, and they did it.
We did, yeah.
I mean, we got two really good running backs in this class, guys that a lot of people in the country wanted, and you know, that are both look like could be potential every down, really, really quality running back. So I'm happy about that. The other thing I want, go ahead, and then I want to do my wrap up there.
No, I was going to say we got Mark Anthony and I believe Cassius and Brutus, correct? Fine Roman lads.
Right. Friends, Roman countrymen.
Lend your tail back.
The other thing I always talk about signing days, you have to take it in. We talked about like the defection transfers. You have to think about it in the big picture of it's not just the signing class, okay? Mm-hmm. The roster is, you know, the guys who are coming back from last year's starting lineup, but also the signing class, plus the guys who redshirted from last year's signing class, plus guys who are transferring in. Mm-hmm. So it's people look at it as a, you know, a smaller group. So you think like there were, you know, seven or eight guys who didn't play. Now, so a lot of them played in the bowl game because it was such a blowout, but we had a lot of good players who didn't play last year who are now, you know, have a year experience and have a chance to move up. We also have, you know, we talked about this fullback H-back guy from Arizona State. We also have a defensive back from Minnesota that transferred in. It's potentially going to be able to, you know, be a backup corner or something. So you have to look at that whole picture and not just like, it's not just the guys who played on the field last year, plus the signees. There's a bunch of other players in there too.
Here's my question. I want to ask you about quarterback real quick, just real fast. So if Bo Nix doesn't get the starting job, and that'll be very hard as a true freshman, though we've seen it around the country, He'll just hang back and wait his turn, I'm sure, because he's a true freshman coming in. He expects to have people ahead of him, probably. If Malik... Mm-hmm. Huh? Excuse me?
You say that we just witnessed a bunch of true freshmen transfer because they didn't get to start, but keep going.
I mean, he hadn't even set foot on the field yet. Have we seen a bunch of players transfer that hadn't even reported to campus yet?
No, I'm thinking about like at, you know, at Georgia's
at the end of the season. I'm not talking about at the end of the season. I'm talking about at the beginning of the season. Mm. I'm talking about like Kelly Bryant, only as a true freshman. I mean, let me recapitulate what I'm trying to say because I was not making myself clear, obviously. Bo Nix is coming in as a true freshman. And knowing him and knowing his family and knowing his connections to Auburn and knowing that he's a true freshman coming in, I could see him being our starter, but I could also see him not getting named the starter on opening day and saying, oh, well, I'll get it next year or I'll get it halfway through the season, right? Whereas what I was going to say was, whereas Malik Willis, if he's not named the starter, I could see him saying, well, then screw it. I'm going to transfer because I've already been here a couple of years. And if they're jumping over me to the younger guy, I might as well hightail it some to greener pastures. Now, that's what I was trying to get at. You don't think that's accurate?
Oh, 100%. I think you're right on. I mean, I think if we come out of spring practice and Bo Nix is the leader, or even if Gatewood is the leader, I think, and they have a clear lead, then I think he'll transfer.
Yeah. And I wouldn't blame him. I mean, because he'll know that we have other guys and he kind of got jumped over, you know, his turn came and went. This year is Malik Willis's window. And the only way that if Malik Willis doesn't win the starting job going into the fall, then the only way he's going to be the starting quarterback is if the starter falters or gets hurt. And so otherwise he's missed his chance. You know, and he's going to be a career backup and hardly ever see the field. So he needs to make a tremendous step forward. I like him as a player to a certain degree, but I felt like last year he regressed a bit and they just don't seem very confident in his passing. And frankly, he strikes me as the quarterback as a quarterback Rhett Lashley would have brought in rather than, you know, Chip Lindsey or Gus or whatever. And so if he can't show that he does, that he belongs in that role, then I'm afraid, yeah, he's kind of missed his opportunity, missed his window. So we'll see. I mean, you know, in an ideal world, he's great, and then we have Gatewood as his backup, and then Bo kind of gets to, you know, red shirt and get some seasoning, get in the weight room, working the plays and everything. But
well, then, and with the 4-game rule, he could come in some blowouts or some small school games and get some reps.
But just as equally, I could see Bo end up being thrust into the starting role because they need that passing threat, and he's the only one that can do it, maybe, potentially. So I think it remains to be seen how he's going to fit in our offense. I mean, I think he could make it work the way that Stidham did year before last. I don't want to see him out there like looking like Stidham this past year too much, because that was very frustrating. But anyway,
no, he's a much better runner and athlete than Stidham is. I think you'll see that.
All right, so. Anything else about signing day or the depth chart as it stands now or whatever? Or what do you think?
No, I'm good. Okay. we're going to have some discussions over the course of the offseason about position groups and who's coming and who's going and which freshmen we like to make an early impact and that kind of stuff.
Well, we got a new running back coach. Have we talked about that?
I can't remember if we talked about that or not. Carnell Williams
is our running back coach. Yeah, so I'm not quite sure what happened with Horton. I think maybe we touched on Horton leaving. I don't know if we had heard that Cadillac was a replacement yet, but whatever happened with him, he's ended up at where Vanderbilt, I believe now. So I guess he's doing okay. And
I don't know what the deal was. I think there were two potential things. I think one is the Asa Martin. Mm-hmm. Playing time thing.
Yeah.
But also I think he did a great job recruiting like Kerryon, but in the couple years since Kerryon, I feel like running back recruiting has been kind of blah.
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten any top shelf running backs, you know, that could be every down backs. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I really like Shivers, for example, but I don't think he's going to be an every down SEC tailback. So I think in this cycle, that changed, and we got two guys I think they could fit that bill. So,
yeah,
we'll see. But so that, yeah, I think that was part of it with Horton. I don't know, though.
We haven't had a rugged between the tackles bruiser. I mean, Kerryon wasn't even that, really, since what's his name, you know, a couple of years ago that kept having his foot hurt and ended up never really getting to have the year we wanted from him. So, and he wasn't even brought in as a tailback. He was like a fullback H-back guy, you know, until he got pressed into service as a power back. So I can't remember the last.
Petway? Or?
Yeah, Petway. The last real power running back that we brought in to be a power running back, gosh, I mean, I guess, you know, 15 is when Kerryon emerged. So I guess it would be.
Cameron Artis Payne?
Was it? Holy cow, that's. You know, you think about Gus having a great running attack, but that's a long time since we had a real, you know, guy that we brought in to be the tailback, be the power back. You know, Kerryon was kind of his own thing, and there's not been a lot of running backs like him. His style was very unique and kind of hard to – he could look like the guy that plows into the pile and pushes the pile, but that's not really what he ever was. You know, he was much more of a big, I want to say almost like a big scat back. He wasn't a scat back. He wasn't Shivers. He wasn't the Lizard. But he also wasn't a power back. He was kind of a strange hybrid of quick finesse, reading the gaps, acceleration. He was kind of unique. You look back on Kerryon and you really realize he was a very unique running back. He was outstanding, but he had a little bit of Cadillac. He had a little bit of Trey Mason. He had a little bit of Cameron Artis Payne, but kind of all in one package, you know. But he wasn't any one of those things.
A little bit of like Stacey Danley,
yeah.
You know, James Brooks kind of ability to slip the tackles and never take the big hit and stuff.
Yeah, he was really unique. He's hard to He's hard to classify. You can see why a lot of teams didn't even want him as a running back. They were going to have him play safety, which is so weird. But, yeah. The cornerback coach, Brown, going to Purdue. Clearly,
that's
they
the
need
story.
Clearly,
it's
they
the,
need help.
And I don't know. Maybe he met them at bowl week and liked them. So that's the story. Is he's leaving to go to Purdue? They have not replaced him yet. There's been some discussions with different people, so it'll be interesting. I do think the guy we brought in, Marcus Williams from Memphis, the safety coach, did a really good job with the safeties, but also a really good job recruiting in Mississippi. So that was a big help. I feel like the corners played well under Brown.
Bob's going to say
always fuss about the
interference. They couldn't defend for not interfering constantly. I was going to ask you, is that part of it? Maybe.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I think, he's moved around a lot, and maybe he just wanted to move around. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a buyer's market in Purdue after the way they played in the bowl game. So, any other coaching news or player news that we've missed?
I hope not.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going
to... Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
What we got, if anything, today?
Hi. The first thing, we've gotten a lot of really positive feedback about the We Believe series, so I need to give you a bunch of credit for that.
Great.
It is so well done. If you enjoy Auburn football and history, then you need to be listening to those podcasts.
Well, and we just recorded our fifth one with a special guest, your brother Pat.
Yeah.
So I'll be dragging it into the editing room and working on it.
I want to give you credit because those are definitely a labor. There's a quality to them, the way you put the sound clips together with the music and the people talking and stuff. It's a very professional sounding podcast. I mean, it really does sound like, something that came out of a high-end production studio. So you deserve a lot of credit for that.
And not my basement. I mean the Palatial White Rocket Studios. Whoops. Well, I appreciate that very much. It's kind of something I want to stand for a while, I'm putting permanent links to it on the auwishbone.com page as they go out to the general public. Now, of course, our patrons get them about a month early, but about 4 to 6 weeks ahead, our patrons are getting to hear them just because they deserve, they deserve bonuses. They're ponying up cash to help keep our shows on the air, and so they deserve to get special things, and we have a variety of things we give them over the course of the year, and one of them is a way early a chance to hear the new episodes of We Believed. The first three are currently out to the general public through Podbean and on iTunes and everything, and because the iTunes podcasts kind of roll off, and get lost in the shuffle very quickly on iTunes and the podcast app and everything, I'm putting them permanently on the auwishbone.com page. So if you want to hear the first three episodes and they've already rolled through the podcast app and you can't even find them, just go to auwishbone.com and scroll down a little bit. And I've got permanent audio players for each episode. And as when the fourth episode will probably go up sometime in March, about the time I get the fifth one edited for the patrons. And it'll then come through iTunes and Podbean and everything, and War Eagle Reader, and then it'll go up on that site. So my goal is that when the whole series is done, it'll permanently live there on that auwishbone.com page, and people can come along and listen to them anytime they want and find them all there in one place. And I'm working on a couple of new guests that'll be joining us interspersed in episode 5, which is we just recorded with Pat, which is the 1993 through 98 Terry Bowden era. But I got to tell you, I don't know if you've gotten to hear episode 4 yet, which is the first time ever. I've listened to it about four times now. I've listened to it about four times now myself, And I just can't get enough of it. It just makes me happy to hear, first, you and me talking about that game, beating Alabama in Jordan-Hare the first time. And then I've got a lot of audio clips from the game. I've got, like, Jim Nantz talking about it on CBS. I've got Reynolds Wolf talking about his experience at it, Jerry Hinnan talking about it, and lots of just clips all the way through Pat Dye in the locker room, you know, afterwards, and all that stuff is in there. So it's just a really fun listen that the patrons have it right now, and it'll be up for the public probably early March.
Awesome. Right. I can't wait.
All right.
All right, a couple quick questions here. Our first one kind of follows in our opening question tonight. This is from Aetitude, who says, should I get my hopes up? What particular sport and why?
Yeah. What sport are we down to now? I don't even know. I mean,
baseball season just started this weekend. So
how are they looking?
And we did – well, they made the playoffs last year, made a regional. So,
yeah.
You know, I feel good, pretty good about it.
Okay.
I feel like we're in pretty good shape there. So, I still think this basketball team could win, you know, either win a few games in the SEC tournament, do some damage in the NCAA tournament.
I just don't want to lose to Alabama in the first round again.
I hear you on that. Amen.
Next question's
from Danny. Good. The next question's from Danny Buckles, who says, guys, would Brent Venables be a head coach option? He sure looked impressive with coverages in the national championship game. With next year's schedule, I see it is hard for Gus to be back. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you got to think that unless he's the Virginia Tech defensive coordinator all over again, who just like wants to spend his entire career at one school being defensive coordinator, you got to feel like that guy's got a head coaching job somewhere ahead. And he is a pretty tough cookie, so... And I feel like he's responsible for a lot of Clemson's success the last few years. So,
it's February 2019. I don't want to start the who's going to be the next Auburn coach discussion.
I can't
go there.
Yeah, not yet. But I sympathize with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I did want to give some credit to the email from Ben Spooner, who emailed at a recent podcast. You were struggling to remember any defensive backs that wore number 11. He said, "What was that, Chris Davis?"
I saw that, and I'm like, "When did I?" I don't even remember saying that. If I did, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't remember that at all.
I think we were just talking about uniform numbers and. Oh. Okay. You were like,
yeah, no, I'm,
players I, wearing number 11 making a difference. So
I'm well aware of old number 11. Yeah, from the opening kickoff of the Oregon game in 2010, all the way through the last game of 2013. Yeah, I'm well aware of number 11. I've just that's weird. So I don't know what I was saying if I said that.
Hi, that's it for your list of questions.
We gotta thank our patrons really quickly. Again, you get great things like early access to We Believed, and we've got the basketball tournament coming up. John, you're on top of that. Our folks will get to play in that. We've also got this will be the second season of our Formula One League. We have several folks that compete in that, which is a lot of fun. You get to pick several drivers and cars and teams and put yourself a little Formula One team together, and it's really fun. So we got lots of things. We gave away free books a while back. I shipped out like a dozen books to our patrons that requested different ones that I had left over from the convention season. So lots of cool benefits you get, in addition to just helping keep us on the air. And the folks that are doing so right now that we appreciate are Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Carl Von Drunker, and Phil Amthor, along with Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, And then there's Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, Dave Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zvachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Way, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, I'm almost to the end, John, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, and in our last little stretch here, we have Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Rant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time and anonymous donors. John, I wanted to, and by the way, if you want to join that crew and have your name called out every episode on this and all of our other shows, including the White Rocket Show and On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, and just recently posted an Avengers episode where Mike Gordon and I talked about the Infinity Gauntlet, which was a lot of fun, then just go to www.auwishbone.com and just follow the link there where it says Become a Patron. It's simple as that. John, I wanted to ask you, one of my biggest Twitter storms lately was I tweeted out, what was your favorite five places to eat and drink in Auburn over the years, and I listed the ones that, like, you and I and our friends used to hang out at, and man, I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people were tweeting me for days, it hadn't let up yet, about all the favorite places. So what were your couple of favorite places you used to like to go eat or drink back in our day in Auburn?
We made touchdowns.
Yep.
Was the thing back then. I remember that. We did Darnell's.
Mm-hmm. We spent too much time at Darnell's.
Yeah, we did. You know, the Strutting Duck towards the end was starting. Used to go out there a little bit. I mean, there's always, like, in terms of places to eat, it would be like Guthrie's and Mama Goldberg's and that kind of stuff.
I feel like
Barbecue House.
I feel like our Model UN crowd, we hung out at Mama Goldberg's a lot because the underage folks could get in there, and we had a lot of our crowd was underage, under 21.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they could get in there too. Yeah. Oh, those were good times, man. That was a good old time we had back then. So, you want to take a quick look around? Let's see. Here's the pink button.
Trip around the SEC.
Let's drink around the SEC. I was talking about doing the drink around the world thing.
I always put some notes in here, things I want to talk about. And this week there's not a whole lot to talk about. Yeah. I don't want to talk about SEC basketball programs. I mean, Alabama hired a new coaching staff with like seven new assistant coaches. Jeez. You know, for like the second year in a row, basically. Yeah. Sarkisian is back as the offensive coordinator.
Where did he
so
go?
So we'll see if this has any impact.
Where did he go off to when he was
after he went to the Falcons, and the Falcons fans were miserable with him there. He did not do a good job in Atlanta. So.
Oh, so now he's back at Alabama. I missed that memo.
Yeah. Yeah, he's everybody left. Mm-hmm. Went to other jobs and stuff, even parallel jobs. So he's the offensive coordinator.
Lateral move, Saban. Good. One other thing I wanted to ask you about while we're talking about around the SEC is I've listened to Brandon a couple of episodes now talking with his crew about the state of Auburn's facilities. And I guess it's just one of those things where what was good 5 years ago is suddenly woefully inadequate, because I thought we had pretty darn good facilities. I mean, the last time I heard Auburn's facilities being talked about, it was Will Muschamp saying how Auburn's facilities were so much better than Florida's. And now we're being told that our facilities are worse than Mississippi State and Ole Miss, and we're on the way heading down toward Vanderbilt. So what's going on with that, and what needs to happen, if you know anything about it?
I mean, when people say facilities, they're talking about two things, really. We have an indoor practice facility. That was the thing that coaches wanted forever, and they got it. So a football-only administrative building, you know, kind of offices, meeting rooms, that kind of stuff, and, you know, the potentially other renovations to the stadium. Hmm. So really talking about the football-only facility, and I think it's one of these things like, you know, Auburn people, some Auburn people are like, I'm not, you know, I don't want to donate to that while Mazan is there. Capital projects take a long time. It takes a long time to raise the money. It takes a long time to build. It takes a long time to, you know, get them approved and fill them with furniture and stuff and then use them. So, you know, if we had the money tomorrow, it would be a couple of years before people could move in. So I think, like, the idea that this is somehow like a Gus thing is not at all. Like, if you know, people say like, wow, Clemson, man, they really came on. It's not just Dabo. They have a spectacular football facility, football-only building with a slide in it and all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's an arms race. I mean, it's stupid in a sense that it is an arms race, but the amount of money that football programs generate makes it an arms race. And if we want to compete with Alabama's and the A&M's and the LSU's and the Georgia's, then the reality is at some point Auburn's going to have to build one, but build a football-only building. Yeah. And you could stick your head in the sand and pretend it doesn't matter, but it's also like, you know, it's one of those things like you're in an arms race trying to impress recruits and other schools. At some point, other schools have cool stuff that you don't. And it's, you know, everybody wants to, you know, blame Gus because he's not beating Georgia and Alabama and Clemson recruiting when, you know, part of it is facility. So I'm not saying that if Auburn had a football-only facility, we'd be, you know, have the best class in the country. But, you know, I think it's one of the ideas. It's one of the things that can't hurt. I don't know how much difference it would make. I don't know. In the big picture of is that where Auburn really needs to spend money? I know they've you know announced a bunch of new academic buildings today, for example. But I think that's just kind of where it is when people talk about the buildings thing.
Well, I've said this before, but virtually every coach in Auburn history has wanted something new, and they've always been told no, no, no. And then they leave or get fired. And then when we hire the new coach, one of the things we say is, oh, we'll give you this new thing that the other coach wanted. It always seems to go way. You know, so I'm sure, you know, hopefully everything will work out fine with the way it is now. But if it doesn't, then I'm sure that the next coach will get a football facility on par with the best in the conference, which will be that way for about 3 years, and then all of a sudden we'll be behind Florida again or behind Alabama again or behind, you know, LSU again or whoever. So, or A&M with all their money. So, and I think having A&M in the conference is going to make a difference too because they have so much money.
Yep. They're a very, very wealthy athletic program. And I mean, it's stupid, but the reality is if you're standing still, people are going past you in this kind of stuff right now. So you have to be thinking all the time about what could we improve and what could we build and what could we make better.
All right. Well, we will see. I mean, having a good year would help, but the schedule coming up this fall is one that, I mean, it's going to be difficult for any coach and any team to do well. We'll have to just see how we can, you know, this is one of those 1983 style schedules. So we'll... It's just that instead of playing a lot of really powerful teams out of the conference, in addition to a small SEC schedule, we'll be playing a larger SEC schedule where several of those teams might as well be, you know, big out of conference opponents because they're just as every bit as tough as like a, you know, in other words, they.
Well, I was going to say because I thought you were making a reference to the fact that we never see Florida.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I know that if somebody didn't know any better, they'd think we were in the same conference with Clemson, and they're just in another division, so they rotate on for every 3 years every so often, whereas Florida is a completely out-of-conference team, right? I mean, so – but, yeah, very exciting to get to play – are we playing at Florida, I think?
Yeah.
So
– Oh, yeah.
I guess 2011 was the last time we played Florida. That's crazy. And before that, it was 2007. We've played them once since Tuberville was there. That's crazy. That's crazy. All right. Well, any last thoughts?
I could tell that we're a little out of sync, out of practice, because we talked over each other more in this episode than we have in 5 years.
I don't understand it, but oh well. I just figure we're having audio problems because I'm getting a lot of audio static and stuff. So, oh well, it'll correct. All right. Well, I guess we're going to wrap it up for tonight. This has been kind of our just checking in on how things are in February and heading towards March Madness and then spring training, spring practice and A-Day. Hallelujah. So our time is up. We thank you for yours. Wargo, John.
Wargo, Van, and I hope everyone finds their happy place out there.
we'll keep looking.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.